Hello, and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoons, the weekly podcast that revisits, reviews, and ridicules some of the world's weirdest animated series. I'll be your host today, Dave Trumbore. And with me, as always, is DC area improv artist and comedian, Sean Paul Ellis. How's it going, Sean?
David, I'm doing fantastic.
Sounds good. And from the Bay Area, we also have Matt Barron today. What's up, Matt?
What up, Dave?
And as a very special guest, I'd like to extend a warm, hearty welcome to our good buddy and enthusiastic cartoon fanatic, Joe Gallo. What's going on, Joe?
Not too much, Dave. How you doing?
Not too bad, man. We're excited to have Joe here along with Sean and Matt because today we're going to be talking about an excellent series.
Are you going to do that?
I'm going to do it the entire time. The entire time. No, I'm actually not going to do that because this show is actually really solid. It deserves much better humor and discussion than that. So
I was going to say, if you honestly tried to bot master this up, I was going to be so disappointed with you.
No, I won't do that.
You jerk.
I won't do it.
This isn't going to be your bot mitzvah, Dave.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, God.
My God. He's done. So Matt's done for the day.
And I'll see you guys in 40 minutes.
Abandon thread.
So since Sean's all fired up about this one, we're going to turn it over to him for a second. He's going to give us a little bit of background on Exo Squad.
Awesome. So Exo Squad ran from 1993 to 1994. There were two full seasons of this show that yielded a total of 52 episodes. They actually canceled during the production of the first episode of the third season is when they pulled the string on this. And it turns out that it was a joint venture between the USA and Fox Network. Notable voice actors that they had in this were Robbie Benson, who should just go by Robert because he's an adult. And he was the voice of the Beast from Disney's Beauty and the Beast. Lisa Ann Beeley, she was in Gundam Wing and a lot of other anime like Ranma Half. And Janice Jodd, who was my favorite as Lady Frenzy Botsmaster. Yeah. Mm. Getting so sexy.
So that's caught us up for history today. Anything else?
Indeed.
Sweet. We're actually going to turn it over to Joe now, who's going to give us a broad kind of overview of what the series is about before we get into the episodes.
So set in the future. We've got humanity spread among the so-called homeworlds of Mars, Earth, and Venus. And in order to colonize those planets, humanity bred a group of superhumans, the Neo Sapiens. And the show picks up with the beginning of an uprising of the Neo Sapiens against their human overlords. Basically, they've in secret built a fleet of fighting machines to rival the human fleet, the Exo fleet. And so there's a big war. The humans are dealt punishing blows at the beginning. So, you know, this is the tale of a noble lieutenant and his, you know, plucky band of misfits fighting the rebellion against the forces, the overwhelming forces, that is, of the Neo Sapiens.
And can I say, Joe, I'm glad that you used the full term Neo Sapiens and didn't call them by some type of a derogatory slur.
We don't use the N-word.
We can't
here.
Have any slurs on this show.
No N-word here. Kids listen to this.
Are we not saying Neos?
Oh, man, come on. I just told you we don't use the N-word here.
Listen, don't drop the hard N there, Joe, okay?
All right, guys, we'll clean this up in the edit, but maybe we should take a second and we're going to get into the episodes right after this.
Yep.
So normally what we would do here is we would just take one, probably the first episode from the series, and just kind of go through it, tell you more or less what it's about. Because a lot of these series, that first episode really kind of encapsulates everything that the series is about. This one, because it actually is a more kind of a dramatic take, they set up the 52 episodes in this opening arc that spans over 5 episodes. And the arc is called The Fall of the Human Empire. So, you know, real sunny, real uplifting kind of thing going on here. But it's a great introduction that starts with, like Joe mentioned in the overview, you've got the human race that's kind of like spread out into near space, not super far in space, but near space. You've got this sort of manufactured slave race of these Neo Sapiens. You've also got this pirate threat that's just kind of out in space doing their own thing on the pirate ships. We're going to talk a little bit about the names so you can kind of keep straight who's who. And describe some of these characters a little bit, so you have a mental picture if you haven't seen these or aren't familiar with them. So let's start with the humans for now. Okay. Let's start with the E-Frame. So you want to talk about Able Squad?
Absolutely. Awesome. So the leader of Able Squad is the Lieutenant Commander J.T. Marsh, who is voiced by Robbie Benson. And he is sort of this all-encompassing, responsible person who just kind of bears the weight of everything that's going on his shoulders. Constantly feels that he needs to do the right thing, even if it is not following protocol, which is pretty evident within like the second and third episode of this story arc. And so he kind of encounters a lot of problems, but thankfully this ensemble that he has of other E-Frame pilots kind of come to his aid. And that's Nara Burns, who, when you kind of see her story, her character, she's kind of like she's very homesick. And she has this family that's on Venus, who's a group of farmers. That's actually a very sad story.
Yeah, yeah. We see kind of into her life through these messages that she sends back home from the ship or from her installation. Yeah.
Right. And so she has this family, mother, father, and a brother that's back home on Venus who are farmers. And sort of the tragedy that they go through. There's also like they have like an engineer who's named Maggie Weston, who she's kind of in charge of repairing all the E-Frames. There's Rita Torres, who is another soldier that they have, who like she really hates pirates. It comes out kind of evident in like the first couple episodes. But then there's Alex De Leon, who's sort of like the reconnaissance expert. And my favorite that I want to talk about, Wolf Bronski.
Oh, man. He's a crowd pleaser.
Oh, my God. Bronski is probably one of the best characters in this show because he is disgusting. Like, he is a gross human being. And how he's actually been able to stay on Able Squad, I'm always confused by, because everybody else on this show is in, like, peak physical condition, except for Bronski, who, not even having like had a drink or had like a soda or a beverage of any kind in his hand, every time he talks, he just burps.
Just belches his way through everything.
I bet he smells like alcohol.
Like so good. All the time. Smells so good.
I wonder if Exer Squad has like a red shirt policy. I mean, maybe they recruited him out of high school and he's just, you know,
just coasting.
Yeah, exactly.
The funny thing is, I took your red shirt as like a different meaning and like a Star Trek meaning, because they do actually kill off some characters in this show. Now, it's not to the point that it's just like a general red shirt that they introduce him at the beginning of a show and then he dies by the end of it. Sometimes it's just other people that are just normal people out doing their thing, like I don't know, a cargo ship pilot or something like that, and they actually kill people off on this show, and it affects the Exo Squad members, the Able Squad members.
Right.
In really, like, profound ways. So I was really surprised that a show from, like, an animated cartoon series from the mid-90s went that deep. But we can get more into that.
This wasn't a kid show targeted at, 6 to 8-year-olds. This was for your more mature audience, right. Your, 12-year-olds.
Yeah, like right. Us. like we were.
Well, we watched it.
Yeah.
There are two other members of Able Squad who are Takage, who, I don't know, he was just... He didn't really have like an E-Frame like everybody else, which he just has a jet. Like,
yeah, it's utterly forgettable with his stupid jet.
And Joe, maybe you should explain. So the dumb jet aside, maybe you should just explain E-Frame since we've kind of dropped that term a couple times.
Well, so what you need to picture here is Lieutenant Ripley in the power loader.
Exactly.
Yep, 100%.
It's got rockets. You can go in space.
Yeah, and you can fly from like this.
Grab a couple of missiles on the thing, yeah. And
grappling hooks. Grappling hooks, missiles, whatever.
Yeah, grappling hooks. My God,
so good.
Give me another armload of missiles. Skip the grappling hook, yeah. Please.
So my one question about all of these E-Frames. All right, it seems like everybody has a different type of E-Frame.
Yeah, they're all custom. It's custom build, man.
How much is the homeworld government paying where they're just like, oh, thanks for signing up to be an E-Frame pilot. Why don't you design your own battle frame? Like, just get into it as much as you want to put on there. And what idiot would be like, yeah, I think a grappling hook would work better than, like, a cache of missiles.
You don't know why you're going to need it, though, Sean. You just need it.
You just need it.
Yeah. It's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. Yeah,
well
Sean.
Said.
It saved Takagi in episode, what, like four? Maybe it was five?
Yeah, and they use it too, so they do use it.
He was a throwaway character. If he would have died, that would have been like, oh, that dum-dum in a jet who didn't have an E-frame passed away like in the first episode.
But he would have been like, eh. He had a mean grappling hook.
The body count at that point in, like, the first couple episodes has to be in, like, the tens of thousands of people.
Oh, yeah, and we'll get into that, too, because this is a big part of the plot. It goes very, like, very heavy into kind of, like, Starship Troopers, Battlestar Galactica territory. It's that level of story that it's actually...
You know, but the final character that we have that's in Able Squad is Marsala.
Which leads us into the Neo-Sapiens. So, Matt, do you want to kind of describe the Neo-Sapiens? I don't want Sean dropping another hard N on anybody, so if you could do it.
Okay, so blue people.
Good.
Are their heads smooth or are they lumpy, Matt? Do they have lumpy blue heads?
They do kind of. I'll say it's phrenology would be an interesting study.
That is an amazing reference.
Yeah. You could make a whole career out
Fade
of it.
Fade to black. Sapiens. Episode finished.
And we're out. but at any rate, it's this kind of classic, engineered sort of, bio race that, you know, ends up revolting against their masters. I mean, it just happens again and again in, you know, the sci-fi realm, especially in the kind of late 80s to late 90s sci-fi. You know, and I know we talked about Starship Troopers and everything like that, but in the same year time frame, I really saw a lot of parallels in Space Above and Beyond.
Oh, okay.
No
which kind
is.
Of ran like the same number of years, that sort of mid-90s time frame. And there were a lot of, parallels with the silicates, which ended up, you know, they were engineered to colonize worlds, to do the, you know, quote, slave labor that, you know, biologics couldn't do.
Well,
and then they ended up
from Blade Runner as well.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Like, same thing, except, you know, the only difference between Blade Runner and Space Above and Beyond was Blade Runner was 80s and, you know, Space Above and Beyond was the same time frame. So that's only, I mean, even though it's exactly the same, it just kind of smacked of that same parallel, you know, for the pure, like, you know, years the show ran.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'd like
that's
to
a
know
fair
what
comparison,
the Voight-Kampff test would be like for distinguishing a Neo-Sapien from a human.
I think it's
know?
Just the eye when you look at it.
Yeah, you have to get that camera real close to their eye.
If they're 10 feet tall and lumpy and blue, I think you could.
I mean, yes,
tall and lumpy and blue.
Yes.
Joe, I
does
feel
he have
like
two thumbs on each hand? He might be a Neo-Sapien.
Yeah, they also have only four fingers, yeah.
And
so I feel like the Voight-Kampff test would go something like this. So you're blue.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes.
And then it just ends there.
Next.
Fade to black. Can I wanted to ask, shoot, like, for Neo-Sapiens, like, I know, Baron, you just said, like, they created them for, quote, slave labor. I think we could just remove the quote. Like, humans genetically engineered this as a race specifically to be slaves.
Yep.
Like, how terrible of a civilization are we that, like, in what was this, like 2025, that like we were just like, you know what, we should just genetically engineer slaves. But Baron, here's my big question about this though, is like, why would you create a race that's not only taller, vastly stronger, all right, but also like has like an even cool demeanor, like they were a Vulcan.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know, let's ask the engineers over at the Macross series at Robotech, because with the Zentradi, it's pretty much exactly the same, dude.
Yeah, true. I mean,
like you know, you brought up a key point. Like, we bioengineered these people in this series versus them being like, you know, in Blade Runner. They were androids, you know, in Space Above and Beyond. They were androids. They were kind of, you know, cyborg sort of, you know, half man, half machine Terminator shit going on there. Versus in Exo Squad, they were a purely like bioengineered, fully biological species.
Yeah, and it actually plays in pretty in an interesting way, because for a while, you don't really know. Well, it turns fairly quickly, but for a time, you don't really know, like, oh, man, should I be rooting for these humans, some of which are, like, really kind of dastardly, or should I be pulling for the right. Neo-Sapiens? Yeah.
So
sides, there's, you know, the humans are obviously in a bad position that they've bred a slave race. That doesn't sound so
good.
That's
never good.
And there's an awful lot of racism at the beginning from the humans towards the Neo-Sapiens, but the same thing happens. Happens, you know, a few episodes later on the opposite side. So there's no there's a bit of good and evil. You know, certainly we're supposed to root for Able Squad, but you know, it's definitely shades of gray in this show, not black and white.
Well, and we should mention that too. Why is there ill will? It's because 50 years prior to the introduction here, there was actually a revolt from the Neo-Sapiens that was just quickly put down, more or less by all the exoframe squads. So it was all the E-frame squads that went in, and they had the superior right. technology, which allowed them to overcome their own technology that they had, you know, bioengineered these Neo-Sapiens to be.
Dave, humans are the worst.
We are the worst.
Terrible. But, like, to jump back into episode one, yep. like, you really get kind of, like, your first idea of just kind of, like, the demeanor of a lot of these Neo-Sapiens. Like, there's this pirate uprising that is out in space, and so they're sending the Exo Fleet to take care of them. And so, like, these pirates have attacked the homeworld colonies, right. and they've killed people. Like, and which, again, going along the lines of the show, like, there are people who are just dying, like, just all the time. You know, it kind of, like, as a kid's show, it's a little bit brutal, but...
Oh, it was dark for a kid's show, like Joe said, yeah.
You flash back to, like, to the homeworld, like, to Earth, and it's, like, the female president of the homeworld colony, and she is, like, screaming. She is, like, yelling in front of, like, this Congress that they have that's set up there, and then at some point, like, what was it, Phaeton, right. who we should...
We'll talk
a little bit about Phaeton. He comes on and is just like, just calm down, dum-dum. Let me speak with a little bit of logic for like a couple seconds. Right. And like responds
he's
to the
He's got
threat.
A bit of gravitas.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just like he's got this cool that like you're just like, oh, all right, maybe. I mean, he's talking with a very like even tone, very passionately, but you can tell that it's like it's controlled, which I think like makes him even more of like a creepier or like a deadly threat that like he doesn't like really ever go like insane about anything. Like, there's no like true passion or like crazy like frenzied energy. He's like this controlled like I will destroy you.
Yeah,
don't care what it is.
Intelligent, calculating
man with a plan. Yeah, he's a man.
But I mean, like, you know, he just comes in and like tells the home colony like president. He's like, just step aside, idiot. Like I got this one, and just explains to them that we should send the entire grouping of the Exo Fleet out to address this pirate threat.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how Operation Destiny begins.
Yeah, so I don't know if Sean mentioned it or not, but the governor of Mars, Governor General Phaeton, is Neo-Sapien. So keep that in mind. So after the uprising 50 years ago, after that rebellion was quashed, they actually made some... adjustments or whatever that were like, okay, you guys can kind of govern yourselves. You're not going to be quote unquote slaves anymore. So they have a little bit of autonomy, still not quite enough for General Phaeton. And there is ill will on both sides.
They're
indentured kind of servants.
And he's the governor of Mars.
The governor of Mars. Correct.
Correct.
Yeah. So that actually sets up, you see, you're introduced, like Sean said, you're introduced to Governor Phaeton and you know, he's a strong leader. He's doing the right thing for his people, but he's very, like, even-tempered. Even in the face of, like, human assassination attempts, there are still people that are trying to kill him and people that don't believe that they should have this autonomy or whatever. So he's very, like, even in the face of that. But it masks this kind of dastardly side, which is revealed, I believe, in the second or third episode.
Maybe end of second.
Yeah, towards the end. So it's interesting because the show initially sets it up like, okay, we've got the humans and they've got this these pirates that are out in space. That's the main threat. Are you paying attention, audience? Because that's the main threat. Don't look over here at these Neo-Sapien guys. They're cool. We got no problems with them. We're going out here to take on these pirates. So that's an interesting thing that it's a fairly complex approach for a story for an animated series. because normally it's just you got the white hats and the black hats and that's it. They go at each other for the entire series and the good guys always win. This was portrayed in a very, very different way, which we'll get into now because we're about halfway through our running time. So I just want to make sure we get through the actual arc, talk about where we end up before the rest of the series takes over. So let's talk about my buddy Jonas Simbaka. What a good name.
Oh, my God.
What a name that guy's got.
He is the leader of the pirates, like, armada that they have that's out. They're, like, around, like, the rings of Jupiter or something?
Yeah, they're somewhere further out, Saturn.
Saturn. Yeah. Which, okay, I get that we've terraformed Venus and Mars, but, like Saturn, like they're like beyond the asteroid belt. Like that's at the point where I'm just like, how are those people like living out there? Like how are they like living and surviving and like continuing to be successful? Like that's where I was just like, I don't know that I can extend disbelief this far to them terraforming and living.
You could do it out to Jupiter, but Saturn's too far.
Exactly, Saturn's too far. So the Exo fleet heads out to address this problem on Saturn, and
yeah, which pulls them away from the homeworlds. So they think that back at the homeworlds, like everything's cool, everything's gravy. So yeah, we'll send the fleet out and take care of this pirate threat, which is an actual threat. I mean, they play it up like there are big space battles. There are. It's interesting that they use like military tactics too. It's not just like, well, send in Able Squad. It's like sometimes they send in the E-frames to do reconnaissance. So they don't send them in as just like a battle unit. They send them in to assess the area and then report back. So it's interesting that
I
play that.
Shoot. I took so much problem with this.
Okay.
All right. Because every time they entered into a battle, all right. So what was the general's name? Because you had Captain Marcus, who is like the worst overreacting captain.
Right.
And like he's the worst trope that you could possibly come up with.
He was pretty bad.
And every time there was like a problem, like he was like, oh, I can't believe we're doing this. We should do the other thing. And then they just walk everybody, the entire Exo fleet, right into a booby trap.
So he's the captain of one of the main ships, which I can't remember the name right now. But he's the one that like
the Resolute.
Yeah, so that's where Able Squad is based out of. That's where they fly out of. Luckily,
such a great name for a ship.
It's so good. Luckily, we've got Admiral Winfield also on the ship, and he's like
kind of the
older, more respectable, more even headed. You know, guy in charge, and he's keeping this goon in check because this guy would just drive the entire Exo fleet into the ground, basically.
But I mean, he does. I mean, like Captain Marcus essentially
multiple
does that.
Times.
Yeah,
and
multiple
here's the
times.
Thing. Here's the thing that I take such a problem with when you were mentioning about like military strategy, Dave, is that I totally disagree with you. All right, because every time they entered into a battle, all right, they were like, let's try to do this with the fleet. And then 30 seconds after they get in there, they're just like, oh, no, we're screwed. They're like, send in the Exo fleet.
And
like, they would send them. Like, here's the thing is that throughout the entire, like, from the first episode, all right, with the Earth president, like, screaming, she goes, it's about time that we get those Exo fleet to, like, earn their pay. And that's, like, they say that in the story arc, like, maybe, like, 3 or 4 times. And, like, I picked up on it, and I was like, it seems like the Exo fleet is the only one doing any work out here. Like, it seems
pretty
like
much.
The fleet themselves are pretty worthless. But these
maybe they're
pilots,
very highly paid. Maybe they're paid commensurate to their level of effort.
But I mean, at the same time, Joe, like they should be. They're the people who are saving everybody's ass in every battle that's going.
And they got to pay for these custom Exo frames because they have yet to mass produce these.
That brings
things up
a good point, though, because the human exoframes are all unique, but the Neo Sapien exoframes are much more, you know, mass produced.
Yeah.
So one thing I sort of took from that is the you know, you have this sense of the Neo Sapiens being well equipped, whereas the humans are kind of you've got like the Star Wars, you know, Rebel Alliance,
yeah,
where they're
kind of
just, you know,
stuff
grabbing
together.
Any old ship that can fly at this point, you know.
Right.
That's an interesting point to talk about, just kind of like the style, the appearance of the show, too, because they do, I mean, granted, you've got 10-foot-tall, blue, lumpy aliens walking around and people flying around in exosuits out in space. You don't really have to stretch that too far to be like, oh, that's probably futuristic and sci-fi.
And also, like, when we get to, like, what was this, like, 21, 25 or something like that, like, did everybody just decide that wearing, like, neon was, like, the cool thing to wear?
Everybody's
I'm sorry,
a neon.
2119. Like, did everybody just decide that they're just, like, let's wear the brightest colors possible?
And just
like,
have the weirdest haircuts ever.
Yeah,
it's the weirdest hairstyle.
They were just like, you know what? Like, battle camouflage? unnecessary. Let's make ourselves the biggest fucking target for anything.
Day glow orange.
If you really want to be rich by the time 2125 comes around, you should be investing in neoprene. Because it seems like all other human materials have faded away and that all anybody ever wears anymore is neoprene.
It was actually an invention of the Neo-Sapiens too, so that's really good to know.
Well, you know what? It's better than the black bodysuits with the big silver V that just runs from shoulder to shoulder, so... You know, I'll take a little color scheme in there. So.
Yeah, to each their own. I mean, you got your mullet, you got, you know, your initials buzzed into the side of your head like JT. JT's got like weird landing strips like cut through the back of his hair, but still has a mullet.
You know, I'm glad that the Vanilla Ice, you know, kind of, you know, slits cut into the side of the head.
Yes.
Really made
that
it.
That is exactly what you should be picturing.
I'm glad it made it into the 22nd century because, you know, now we're in the 21st century, kind of faded to black.
Yeah.
But I'm glad it's going to come back.
He's a national treasure.
I actually thought that those landing strips on the side denoted, like,
his rank. In the future, rank will be denoted by haircut. Then why does everyone have a mullet?
We have a crappy military in 2119. Oh, my God. It's the worst.
Okay. Crappy military or fashionable military?
Fashionably crappy.
It's just
military.
Neon and mullets.
I think it's probably swampy in the military.
It's got
I don't know how well those suits breathe.
The other thing is, like, everybody on this planet, it doesn't matter. There's a gamut of characters that run from, you know, the elite exoframe guys to this random reporter that keeps showing up just to be an annoying asshole.
Oh, God, that guy's the worst.
He is terrible. But it just, they show random people from all walks of life. There's also, like, a rebel faction on Earth that we'll get into, too, in a little bit.
I can't wait to talk about Sean Napier.
Sean Napier, former football player guy, whatever. But everybody is jacked. I don't care who you are. You can be, like, an ice cream man. You can be... You know, whatever. Everybody is jacked out of their minds. Even Bronski. Bronski's got to weigh at least 500 or 600 pounds, and all of it's in his gut. But the dude is huge, like cut. It's bizarre. It's a very, very strange, kind of like Spartan. You know, it's almost like a 300 style of.
Oh, I was going to say he's got like. I was going to say Bronski's got like the early like Dust Bowl. Like turn of the century, like bodybuilder, where it's like he's like all biceps and then just like a beer gut.
And they just fat below the biceps.
Also, if we're going to talk about the 300, we need to talk about him being 300 pounds and not like, you know, the sort of, you know, Spartan military chisel.
Oh, yeah, he is taxing that exoframe to be sure.
Yeah, exactly.
He's testing the limits.
Throwing this out there, the exoframe could have been invented to just help him walk.
Yeah, easily. But the crazy thing about them is, like, so in Star Wars they have, I think there's some logic throughout the series and the universe that, like, starfighters, I think it's Star Wars, I could be completely wrong, but they have to be launched, like, while in space. They're not meant for... No, that's wrong, because, I mean, Luke lands on Dagobah. I'm getting super nerdy here.
Oh, good story, bro.
God damn it. But in some other sci-fi...
We'll cut it out in post-production.
Yeah, exactly. So in other sci-fi stuff, you have starfighters that can only be launched from ships, carriers in space. Like, they don't usually make outer space to planetary landings. These exoframes...
Logical, you wouldn't have the heat shielding.
Well, exactly. Or just, like, the energy... consumption, it would just be ridiculous to get back off the planet to head out that
right,
way.
Right, yeah, you could land maybe if you've got the heat shield,
yeah.
But you couldn't turn around and take
but
that.
But these fucking exoframes, man, they can do anything. They can
well,
do anything
so here's anymore. The thing that was interesting about, like, all the exoframes. So, like, they get to the point where, like, they are attacking the pirates, and they are, they're working on, you know, eradicating the pirate problem, and so the pirates pull back into, what do they call it?
The ship?
No, not the ships. Like, the pirates, like, they're attacking the pirates, like, on their home world, right? And the pirates, like, pull back into the ice caves.
Oh, the ice caves. Yes. The trap of all traps.
I think it was, like, one of my favorite quotes. I think it was Nera. She just goes, oh, they're pulling back into the ice caves. They'll be hard to get.
Yeah.
And I was like, shut up.
Shut up, Nera, you rookie.
Dummy.
Just send Bronski in, which is exactly what they do.
This is what they do.
He's like, oh, goddamn, every time.
No, they just go, Bronski, take point. And he's like, what else is new? I'm like, oh, God.
And then just belches. All right, but I want to get back to the story so we can wrap up the arc because we're coming up on a half hour here. So I want to make sure that we tell you guys kind of where the arc of this first intro ends up, and then we'll get on to our whether or not we recommend it, and then we get on to some other stuff. Yes, so, ice caves.
So they get into the ice caves. There's a whole bunch of traps again. The Exo Squad is able to Able Squad is able to overcome and basically like take care of the pirates at that point. And along the line, at the end of the battle, you find out that they get a distress call from the homeworld.
Yep, that's where the shit hits the fan, because this whole time it's kind of been revealed through scenes with General Phaeton back on Mars. He's been, for the last, I don't know, however many years, he's been orchestrating this plan to build their own kind of exo fleet, unbeknownst to the human world. He's got some kind of crazy money laundering scam going on that he's just, like, moving funds around.
Although exo fleet is composed of, you know, the best that humanity has to offer, I don't think the accountants of exo fleet are any good at all.
No, they're not top-notch.
No, if somebody built an entire fleet, you know... You'd think someone would notice.
Yeah, you'd think.
So what you're saying, Joe, is KPMG in the future takes a nosedive in the accountability department.
I think they skipped out on the neoprene investments. They should have
really got on that one.
Yeah, they really should have.
So now Phaeton, yeah, Phaeton's got this entire just like arsenal at his beck and call. And remember that all of Exoframe, the entire Exo fleet, is out the far reaches of space battling this pirate threat. Right. So homeworlds are fucked. Basically.
And so, so Phaeton kicks off Operation Destiny, yes. Which is just, I also want to say, like,
a little pretentious there, Phaeton.
So pretentious. Also, do you think that it's like Phaeton? Like, they were trying to say it's like Fate.
Fate. Like,
his name is like never Fate. About that.
Like, he switched it on? Like, no, I think it was just a cool name.
He turned on the Fate.
Turned on the
he's
Fate.
In charge of the Fate for the Neo Sapiens.
Okay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, Operation Destiny kicks into place, and Phaeton basically takes over, let's do this in order, Venus, Earth, Mars, in, like, a 20-second montage.
Yeah.
Yeah, they pretty really much just the note, whole though, invasion. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Is that phase zero of Operation Destiny, the very first thing that happens is that he puts on an E-frame, and he doesn't take that thing off for anybody.
No,
for the rest
and he doesn't even go anywhere. He's just in his headquarters.
No, he's
giving
just, like, filling out CBS reports, yeah. You know, talking.
Yeah, loves that suit.
But he's doing it in an E-frame. It's totally sweet.
Gallo, this is the best part. All right, he is wearing that thing in his in Phaeton City, which is Chicago.
Yep.
It's now renamed Phaeton City. So he is. Why would you make Chicago your like nexus for everything that's going on? It doesn't matter.
I think they just destroyed everywhere else, pretty much.
Yeah. But he's like as Joe said, he's wearing this E-frame like all the time.
Yep.
Like all of the business that he's conducting is in this like awesome E-frame that he's now wearing. And then he goes outside to address everybody in a public setting where, I don't know, there could be an assassination attempt. Spoiler alert, there is, all right? And that's
also,
the one time that he doesn't wear it.
If I were in Chicago, I would be wearing an E-frame all the time. Just letting you know.
I mean, I'd be wearing it here, yeah.
Guys, I'm wearing one right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in the comfort of my own home. And I'm just chilling in one.
We're getting to that point. But speaking of people who have E-frame envy, I want to talk about Sean Napier real quick before we wrap this up. So there is an Earth-based resistance to the Neo Sapien Revolt, and it centers more or less around Sean Napier. Who wants to talk about this winning personality? Nobody does.
No, I mean, you know, it's just like you get the feeling like it goes along the lines of just like, you know, he's a renegade cop.
Right.
He's got like a heart of gold. He intends to do the right thing, but just like nothing comes up well for him. I mean, he just like he can't get a break. He just kind of always feels like neglected and just kind of like pushed aside. And so,
well, he's
I mean,
he's an exofleet washout.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, he is.
From the very beginning, it's established that he's not, you know, he's not the protagonist. He's a troubled soul.
Right.
Because then at one point he kind of meets up with these other soldiers, these ex-soldiers, before Able Squad, as we know them, comes back from the battle against the pirate fleet and manages to make his way down to Earth. And they have this kind of like just quickly strung together resistance movement that's kind of montage within the last episode. And then they just kind of take off at the end. I don't really know what they accomplished there. They kind of like, they got a ship, you know, they got a Neo Sapien ship, and they basically just flew it back up to try to like cobble back together the rest of the Exo fleet.
I mean, the amazing thing was that like at the end of this, at the end of episode five, like they destroy over half of the E-frames that they have just as like a distraction to get away.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why they didn't use those E-frames just to launch all the missiles and rockets and everything that they have.
And grappling
hooks.
They are all
in grappling hooks, and they are all well-armored. Like, they could have used all of the munition on those E-frames to, like, create a diversion and blow crap up and then escape. But they were like, no, we'll just blow everything up.
Just
like,
blow it all up.
Because, I mean, you know, government spending at that time, we're at a time of war. I'm sure people are just going to be like, oh, do you need a new custom E-frame? Oh, great. We got plenty of them back, you know, on the Resolute. Like,
meanwhile, Napier's taking apart like a 98 Bronco that he found rusted out in a junkyard somewhere. And he's just slapping together his own E-frame that's like got one leg, just kind of hopping down the street.
Well, I mean, like the interesting thing is that like they have these E-frames and like this comes about a little bit later on. But like Sean Napier, like they have like these like police E-frames. That like they use like on Earth, and I guess that they were something like it's a part of the toy, like which I will wholeheartedly admit that I own pretty much every single toy came out for this show. They are all in my garage right now, and it's like one of those things where like they had like these police E-frames for these that like it didn't like everybody else's E-frame kind of like closed it around the body and like shielded them from space.
Even Bronski,
but like. Yeah, even Bronski. But, like, the police E-frame didn't. It was just kind of had, like, a protective, like, riot shield around the front of it. And it was, like, red, white, and blue colors. And, like, they used it to kind of, like, police, you know, the home colonies.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to more or less leave it there just to leave you with a little bit of a teaser again. So as these guys are kind of mounting their rebellion, they flip the script, and the Neo Sapiens are now enslaving the humans. That is right. The slaves have now become the masters. And that's kind of where the rest of the series takes off from there. It's the Exo fleet and the remnants of it, and they're kind of, like Joe mentioned, comparing them to the Star Wars kind of rebel forces. They are now trying to protect what is left of the human civilization and restore order and their rule back to the homeworlds. And that's kind of what happens over the next two seasons. So do you guys have any final thoughts before we talk about recommendations for this one?
I have a quick question. Shoot. That has been something that after watching these five episodes has been on my brain. Are they ever going to explain like the jacks that are in the back of their head that link up to the E-frames?
I forgot about that.
It's
that
the Matrix style
totally
jacks. Great.
Yeah. That is a nice little add-on too.
It's like an add-on, and it's also part of the toys.
Really?
Interesting. Yeah, it was always like a little piece of plastic that came up that like you could put into the back of like the action figure's head. They never fit in there, but I mean, it was the thought that counts. But I mean, like it was something that like in this five episode arc, at one point, I forget which character it is, but like I think it's Nara. She gets injured, and like the jack that's in the back of her neck just like comes out. It's just like, no, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, like malfunctions, I think, at that point, which I think is an interesting thing to kind of write in as a weak point, because they do a lot with these exoframes. Like things go wrong, things malfunction, things get damaged, and then they have to, you know, jump out in their spacesuits and like do things the old fashioned way. Thought that was kind of cool.
Right.
Anything else from the peanut gallery on this one?
Did you notice that their money is little, like, triangular chits?
Yeah.
Which, it's like a trivial pursuit.
How many triangular chits would I need to give you for you to lick the seat of Bronski's E-frame?
You need to fill one or two pies with triangle slices. It's a very
like
trivial pursuit,
Doritos.
Kind of. Oh, Jesus.
I bet that chair tastes like Cool Ranch Doritos
and Belches.
Guys, if you're getting to the point where you're in 2119, invest in Cool Ranch Doritos and neoprene. Those are the two things. If you want to be rich,
Cool Ranch Doritos and teriyaki beef jerky.
Oh God.
Yeah. So if any time travelers are listening to us, and hopefully we just made you some rich folk. But I'm going to go ahead and recommend this one. The last few that we've talked about, we've kind of recommended ironically. Because they've been kind of goofy and bizarre, and you just kind of have to see them to believe them. This is actually a decent show, and I wish we would have had time to watch all of them. I'd like to go back and watch them if I could at some point. But, yeah, what about you guys? Thumbs up?
Definitely
two thumbs up.
Definitely thumbs up. I bought the first season on Amazon Prime
Yeah, was it like 10 bucks? Video. It's not too bad.
Yeah,
it's, like 10 bucks.
It's 10 bucks. I think it's like 12, 14 episodes. Yeah. They haven't released the second season yet. But I'm very curious because there's like the first season, obviously, as we mentioned, is them trying, is like the Exo fleet trying to take back the Earth. And that plot continues into the second season. Right. And there's so much that goes on in this.
And there's such a cliffhanger at the end of the second season that I won't talk about because there is no resolution, because we never did get a third season. There was one episode that was produced, but they canceled it before they ever even aired that.
I would love to be able to see
that'd
that.
That'd be cool. Now, the person that you might want to talk to for that is Jeff Siegel. He's actually the creator of this show. He really hasn't done anything. It seems like this guy kind of fell off the face of the earth after 94, at least as far as IMDb is concerned. So maybe he got out of the game. But, man.
Jeff Siegel, if you're listening, we would love to read the scripts that you wrote for season 3 of Exo Squad, please.
Or, hell, man, just go option that shit and they'll make it into a movie. I would love to see it. But unfortunately, that's about all the time we have for today. So if you want more from Saturday Morning Cartoons, you can head on over to Saturday Morning Cartoons, that's morning with a U.com. You can also check out our Tumblr page. It's saturdaymorningcartoons.tumblr.com. I think Sean's got some. You don't have any more pugs up there, right?
That was my personal account. I accidentally cross-posted.
All right. So we got pugs, but we had pugs, and now we have ExoFrames. And unfortunately, we have no pugs in ExoFrames. But we might be able to shop that in. You can also find us on Twitter at Morning Tunes. You can find me at Dr. Claw MD or over at Collider.com, where I'm an associate editor. Sean, where can we find you?
Find me at Sean Paul Ellis on Twitter. I don't actually have anything to promote this week.
Yeah, Sean just got back from L.A., so good on you.
Yeah, thank you, L.A. Improv Comedy Festival, for having me. You were wonderful.
Well, thank you so much, says L.A. Matt, where can we find you on Twitter?
I am at MattSF07.
And again, I'd like to thank Joe Gallo for joining us today. Joe, where can we find you if you want to be found on Twitter?
At Crazy Joe Gallo.
That's so good. You can tell from this podcast this man is crazy. He is a crazy individual. Speaking of crazy, I do believe that next week we are going to be talking about a personal favorite of mine, The Centurions.
So good.
Oh, man, I can't wait. It's going to be a good one, so hopefully you guys will join us then. Till next time, see ya.